Willkommen zu Gastrogeplauder, dem gastroenterologischen Wissenspodcast der DGVS.
Hallo, liebe Freundinnen und Freunde des Gastrogeplauders. Heute ist eine ganz spezielle Sendung. Ich bin nämlich auf der DDW und es ist mir gelungen, einen der absoluten Superstars zu engagieren. Warm welcome, Doug Rex.
Hey, glad to be with you, Thomas. Hi, everybody.
Doug is Mr. Colonoscopy, of course. And, you know, we thought we would cover one topic, which is polypectomy of flat lesions or EMR, because this has become a little bit confusing. Is it cauter or hold? Should it be full thickness or should it be ESD or block resection? And there's nobody more suitable than Doug to bring some structure into that discussion. So, Doug, if somebody with some experience, maybe not excessive resection experience, meets a 2, 3, 4 centimeter polyp, what should he or she do?
I think in the U.S., I'd say, first of all, that we have to be tolerant of each other and realize that we're all sort of in a different situation. There are a variety of issues that are facing us. One is, I think, even things like the size of the community that we're in the U.S., people are more concerned about having complications if they're in a small town because everybody hears about it. If you're in the big city, it's just the way the information dilutes so quickly. Nobody knows really except the family and a few friends. You don't suffer the kind of reputation damage, you know, from having a perforation on a local celebrity in the small town. So I think we all have come to the situation with a variety of different concerns as well as incentives. You know, there are differences between countries in how well procedures like ESD are reimbursed. In Japan, it's reimbursed much better than an EMR or a standard polypectomy. In the United States, we don't even have a way to code for it. We also can have differences in just how much time we have, how we're paid. Some of us are on salaries. I think if you're on a salary, you're more likely to be willing to do and even to learn a complex, time-consuming procedure. So depending how the situation you're in, you can develop biases, you know, that the way you do it is the way that everybody has to do it. And actually, everybody is under a different set of pressures and concerns. In the U.S., I think the single most important thing that people should remember is that the wrong thing to do is to send that patient to surgery if the lesion appears to be benign. And we've had a little bit of recent mixed evidence, but we're not certain that we are actually seeing declines in the rates of colon resections for benign
polyps. It's still happening quite a bit.
It is still happening. It's still happening a lot. And I think it's a very nice operation, especially the right-sided lesion, the right hemicolectomy laparoscopically is a very nice operation for surgeons to do, but it's clearly associated with a substantially higher chance of death, more complications, readmissions to the hospital for hernias, even when it's approached laparoscopically, and a higher morbidity rate, so higher costs. So the wrong thing to do, and that's probably the single most important thing, is to not send the patient to surgery. Beyond that, yes, of course, we've got the different endoscopic approaches.
First of all, I like this first big infusion of realism.
Yeah.
Because, you know, we are, it's not the enemy EMR versus ESD.
Right.
The problem, let's put it that way, is that there's too much surgery.
Yes. Yeah, exactly. And we tend to lose sight of that, that these large number of operations for surgery, that's a much bigger public health problem than the small incremental reduction in surgeries that we get from an on-block resection that can identify a superficial submucosal invasion, as opposed to a piecemeal one. Even though there's a bit of controversy now about even that, whether it's the end of the world if we have superficial submucosal invasion and a piecemeal resection. So we should take it a little bit easy about these approaches and recognize our own biases when we're having this discussion.
But in an ideal world, so another question comes up, a 3 centimeter or 4 centimeter flat lesion in the right colon, should this be centralized, the patient sent somewhere else with a second colon prep, or should as many centers try to establish experience and start that?
Well, I suspect, again, that there's a lot of regional variation in this. There are issues such as, I'm certain that there are differences in Germany between the United States, but for example, there are a lot of hospitals in smaller communities that want to hold on to their patients. And strangely, there are a lot of people that live in rural areas in the United States that are terrified by driving into, you know, a city of a million people. And so they really want to have regional treatment. I think that having at least regional availability for these resection procedures is important. I know that there's a lot of feeling that once you get to a certain size, I think the most recent ESG document says that 4 centimeters alone is a criteria to send the patient out. It's useful, I think, to have some guidelines for people to think about. And I think that gastroenterologists should be able to assess such a lesion, you know, for the presence of signs of deep and even of superficial submucosal invasion, which is a little bit more challenging. I think the JNET classification, the type 2A versus 2B, is a little bit more challenging than looking for NICE 3 or JNET 3. Mm-hmm. But you want to be able to make that assessment. You want to be able to, of course, distinguish serrated. I think serrated resection has become incredibly easy and safe because of cold resection. I think that the community should be able to do that. I still get referrals, you know, to remove serrated polyps, and I find it a bit surprising almost that it's happening. And then within the adenomas, to be able to assess, you know, granular versus non-granular morphology, to recognize pseudo-depression in the non-granular lesions, which is perhaps, you know, the highest risk for submucosal invasion. So assessment is appropriate and necessary. And that really, I think, can guide whether or not the local gastroenterologist should proceed. But I would say, I think probably everybody should feel comfortable removing sessile serrated lesions that don't look
and
like
then,
they have...
And then with cold, because the complication rate is very low.
It's very low, and they're just very easy to remove. They have, compared to adenomas, very little submucosal fibrosis. They're very loosely attached to the submucosa, so they tend to come off quite easily if they haven't been biopsied or somebody hasn't already removed a portion of it. And it's very safe. And all the evidence suggests that cold is just as effective in terms of rates of recurrence at follow-up. So I would like to see that democratized and that many more gastroenterologists would feel comfortable with that. That's not to say that cold resection can't be done poorly, because it can. And you have to get the snare, you know, firmly enough on the lesion that you actually are making the transection in the submucosa, and you're not leaving the mucosa or muscularis mucosa intact. I think the controversy right now comes in a bit with the granular lateral spreading adenomas.
Can I just have one question? Because the assessment is not very easy either. And I remember a Dutch study where gastroenterologists were really trained, but they didn't recognize cancers. So at the end of the day, I haven't seen it, but AI might help here, right? So that we get some clue where this is heading.
Yeah, I think that could be an important use of AI. I think AI is having a little bit of trouble trying to, you know, find its space with regard to imaging, because, you know, CAD-E is right now it's kind of a little bit of uncertain value, and CAD-X is yet to be proven with regard to distinguishing adenomas from non-adenomas. But this might be an area of recognizing NICE3. I think JNET2B, well, it's been hard for CADX to perform better than experts just across the board so far.
But that's not the challenge. It should be maybe as good as experts, but everywhere. That's the issue.
Right.
But I think there is much more work to be done, you know, with regards to proper gold standard and where is the lesion exactly in that large adenoma sector.
Right. So we're not there yet, but these would be ways that that would be helpful. Yes, I agree that these assessments can be difficult. I think the easiest one is really the distinction between serrated and adenoma. Mm-hmm. This, I think, should be straightforward for most gastroenterologists. There are a lot of clues that suggest that. And even if you move that serrated group into cold resection and then learn how to do that effectively, that's a good step. Once you go over to the adenoma side, the granular lesions are probably at least still candidates for cold resection, but the recurrence rate is going to go up. And so you have some biases that, well, a recurrence rate of, for this 3 centimeter lesion that you described, of 30%, that's absolutely too high. But, you know, another thought, and again, so many things depend on your situation, is that if you take that lesion off in the community and then send it to you, Thomas, to do the follow-up. And there is a recurrence. You can take care of these recurrences generally extremely easily. And under those circumstances, we haven't really required that the patient have an extra colonoscopy, and we've saved them from having a surgery. So I would rather see the community gastroenterologist who is very concerned about having a complication do that, where they can be complication-free and we can still get the job done and avoid surgery.
That's a good point, because there are recent data from Australia that after treatment of the recurrence, re-recurrence rate is very low. And there's an almost philosophical question, because the recent randomized trial, ESD-EMR, the recurrence rate was kind of 1% versus 5%. And the argument was, understandably, that you can, if you have an R0 resection of a large polyp, no follow-up necessary, at least for that lesion. So what's the rate below which you would say the same for EMR? 3%, 1%, where you say, okay, we risk this 1% and do the follow-up as late as if it was an R0 resection.
Well, what I see with quite a few people doing R0 section is that they're still following up, doing at least a follow-up at 1 year. And I'm not seeing that many that are saying, well, we're not just going to do any follow-up at all. I do see we have recently published, just came out in GI Endoscopy in the last few days, an experience where we selected lesions undergoing piecemeal EMR to go directly to 1 year. And the 6 month thing, I'm actually not totally sure where this policy of 6 month follow-up after piecemeal resection is fully supported or where it's based in the literature. I do think that with high-grade dysplasia, there may be some rationale of very, very large resections, but I think a substantial group of the piecemeal resected large, more than 20 millimeters non-pedunculated lesions, we should be looking at randomized trials moving this first follow-up out to 1 year, because I'm not sure that the recurrence rate is either going to be higher or that the recurrences are going to be more difficult to deal with. And I think that cancer is probably going to be an almost never event. We do have to, you know, try to make sure we collect all the tissue and get it to the pathologist. And hopefully the pathologists are doing a good job. But even for piecemeal EMR at the low recurrence rates we're currently seeing, or for, you know, I would say even recurrence rates that are up at 10, 15%, we probably could get rid of one of the colonoscopy surveillances that we're doing this 6 months and then 18 months and then going out to 3 years. We probably could go straight to 12 months and then 3 years beyond that.
On the other hand, there's some issue from large database studies, which has always concerned me, because there's a lot of data saying that people with the small adenomas we are chasing with AI, etc., they have an almost normal prognosis. But the advanced adenoma group has a prognosis which is 2 to 3 times worse. While this should be the population or the subgroup which should benefit most, that means we should bring them back to the normal risk level. So there is something we are missing here in that group.
Yeah, probably what we're missing, and missing literally, is synchronous disease. Mm-hmm. And so, yeah, this is a good point, because I don't think anybody should be brought back at a year until they've had their colon really carefully cleared. And we have shown, and I believe the Australians have had the same finding, that this group with 20 millimeter and larger non-pedunculated lesions, about 40% of them have an additional advanced adenoma in their colon when we clear them. 20% have another adenoma that is 20 millimeters or larger. And about 0.6, 0.7% have a lesion other than the one they were referred for that has invasive cancer in it. And so I think that probably this high rate of metachronous advanced neoplasia in this group reflects that they need their colons really carefully cleared. And that can never be forgotten when you find that 3 centimeter polyp. There could be another one not too far away.
So that means, of those two possible reasons, insufficient resection with a terrible recurrence versus insufficient diagnosis or screening of the rest of the colon, you would opt for the second?
I would, yes. Mm-hmm. That's not to say that there couldn't eventually be something that comes back on the site, especially if it's not treated effectively. And, you know, those of us in referral centers see patients who have sometimes had the same lesion worked on in the community multiple times. And I think that's wrong. That usually reflects ineffective technique And I would say that if you work on a large lesion once, and you're either not confident in the resection, or you know you didn't resect at all, and I would either have an expert do the follow-up, mm-hmm. or certainly if there's a recurrence when you come back and you struggle to manage it, don't keep coming back and looking at that same lesion. And at the same time, be careful that the rest of the colon mm-hmm. is cleared. But I don't think people in the community should work on a large non-pedunculated lesion more than once, or at the most twice before referral. Mm-hmm.
Okay. Also very good point. So let's get back to where we got side branched. There is an adenoma, a granular type, not too big, maybe 4 centimeters or 5 or whatever. So by the ESG guidelines, this should be done with hot EMR also on a broader level.
Yes. And well, the advantage of that, of course, is just the, you know, the very low resection or recurrence rate. So I think it's okay to take that position. I just, again, think that it's fair to look at this data and then consider the individual circumstances that you practice in. And, you know, when you look at this 4 or 5 centimeter lesion and you're thinking about hot EMR, before you do it, if it's in the right colon, if it's proximal to the splenic flexure, according to my interpretation of the evidence, you should also be thinking about how and whether you can close it. And so the approach to the lesion and whether you're going to be able to clip close the site, whether you can use, for example, X-Tack or something to close it, these things are also something to consider before you tackle the issue yourself. I think that a guideline like the ESG one, that once you hit 4 centimeters, that's a reason for referral. It helps us think about mm-hmm. lesions, you know, sort of like this is an area where I could get into more trouble. Maybe I should get help in a lesion like that. Whether you can close it, these are considerations.
Okay, but then you should look whether it's rather homogeneous or has bumps or depressions. That's a stopping sign, isn't it? Simple EMR.
Sure, a granular lesion that has a depression in it, which, mm-hmm. you know, a depression when NICE3 or JNF3 is present, where, you know, or CUDO5, evidence of deep submucosal invasion, there usually is a morphologic change at that site that involves some depression or ulceration. Yeah, that's a stopping point. That is a lesion that I still think is fair to biopsy and send to surgery. If it's a very small area, and it's conceivable that an advanced endoscopist could remove that. And we now have these hybrid methods. We could remove the benign appearing portion of that mm-hmm. lesion with, for example, EMR. And then in the same session, remove that small focus with the full thickness resection device. And so, but I think that probably would be an indication to go directly to an advanced endoscopist. And then nodules, I think, are very tricky because, I mean, a homogeneous granular lesion is by nature bumpy. And so when does a bump become a nodule?
Real bump.
Yeah, mm-hmm. that makes it. I think that's an area where there's probably more variability in interpretation mm-hmm. than others. But yes, once you have a nodule, then you've got a higher risk of cancer. The truly homogeneous lesion, maybe a 1% risk, and nodule, and the more discreet it is, I think, the more there's a color change, or if it appears to have some firmness to it, then the greater the risk mm-hmm. of cancer. And, you know, there's some evidence that most often, if there's cancer present, it's in the nodule, but it can be present outside the nodule. I will admit that above the rectum, we sometimes will isolate that nodule in the EMR process, remove it en bloc with snaring, and then submit it pinned as mm-hmm. as you would for an en bloc
extra
specimen. Yeah, which is not perfect. But again, I think above the rectum, it's acceptable. And part of that, again, is the efficiency of the situation. In a practice such as mine in the U.S., we have so many referrals for these polyps that we kind of make modifications to what we think we can, you know, in our schedule. In our setting, to do ESD, we have to move the patient to the operating room. Mm-hmm. There are greater inefficiencies. It's more difficult to schedule.
That's a big hurdle.
Yeah. So we...
And you think twice.
Yeah, exactly. So all these, I think, practical issues, we, you know, that's kind of the way we, you know, we have to practice to choose the option that we think is most reasonable, most feasible for us to get an endoscopic resection done, hopefully still get a good outcome.
But tell me, is there really a big rectum and the rest of the colon difference? I've seen some early French data of their en bloc resection that they did everything en bloc, that this difference was not so dramatic.
I saw that data, and you know, it differs from a number of other studies that have suggested that the mixed nodular lesion, so a granular lesion that has a nodule in it, in the rectum, has about a 20% risk of cancer in a number of studies. I'm not necessarily ready to start treating the rectum and the colon the same. And it's not only because this data on whether the rectum is an independent predictor mm-hmm. of cancer, but also just because the consequences are greater. And again, if we end up from time to time having to recommend a patient to have a segmental resection of the colon, you know, that is, as a public health problem, in terms of the number of operations that we're avoiding, I think that's a much smaller problem. We tend to be focused on it, whereas it's very small compared to the many thousands of patients undergoing surgical resection for benign lesions. That's the group where we can have the biggest impact.
Okay, I see. So back to the technique, you do your piecemeal EMR, then it should be margin coagulation. That's pretty set, isn't it?
I think that's really standard now. I do think that it's important to very carefully, you know, inspect the base, make sure that you've gotten the resection down into the submucosa. You don't want to leave muscularis mucosa in the base, but once the resection is completed, then you should burn up the margin with the snare tip. And you need to do it aggressively. You need to make certain that 100% of that margin is burned. And the target is that little white line where the cautery margin meets the normal mucosa right at the edge. It's not down in the defect, it's on that mm-hmm. edge, and that needs to be really aggressively burned all the way around the margin. There's no increase in complications from this, but multiple studies suggest a 75 to 80% reduction in recurrence rate. So yeah, that's standard.
It has a learning curve. It's not that easy if you start, right?
I think, you know, it is a little bit challenging to learn. And when I watch others doing it in live courses, I would say my biggest criticism is they're not aggressive enough with it. Mm-hmm. And at the end, it sort of looks a little bit patchy. Mm-hmm. And you really need to get the snare tip down on that, make good contact. If you're going in a direction where the defect, you're on the longitudinal edge, you can stick the snare tip out really 7-8 millimeters. Mm-hmm. And if, as long as it stays straight, you can burn very quickly going down the longitudinal axis and then shorten up a little bit to go across the transverse axis, sort of the cecal side and the rectal side of the defect. But yeah, I agree. You want to have good, firm contact. As long as you're on soft coagulation current, though, it's very safe. Mm-hmm. So I agree. There's a learning curve. Main thing, though, is you ought to end up with a maybe 2-4 millimeter wide rim. It looks like a picture frame of white mucosa right at that edge.
And then closure of lesions on the right side? Because there are some data suggesting that the bleeding is reduced.
Yes, I would still do that. I know we have the recent study from the Netherlands that did not find a benefit. But I think if you look at the bigger randomized trials, the one from the US, Spain, Australia, the data suggests that there's a 2/3 to 3/4 reduction in the risk of bleeding from right-sided lesions. So we are still closing all of these lesions, either with clips or X-tack.
Does the margin treatment make it more difficult if you are aggressive?
Oh, I don't think so. I don't think the margin treatment has an impact. I think they're mm-hmm. still generally straightforward to close. Occasionally, you run into one that is too big. And I think there are some nuances to the approach, but we have these closure clips now. I think they have added a little bit. And I think X-tack has added something mm-hmm. to closure of certain lesions that are somewhat difficult to access. If the defect is going over a fold, it can be hard to approach it with clips. You can go over that, grab the normal mucosa on the cecal side of the lesion with a tack, pull that back to the rectal side and close it. So not as much data, of course, with X-tack, mm-hmm. but it seems in observational studies to work.
But it's also a cost issue. You make something which costs, I don't know, $50 for a snare or even much less into something which is more expensive. But
I agree.
That's another issue.
Yeah.
So, well, almost at the end, I get out here from this podcast with the impression that missing a cancer focus in a piecemeal EMR is not always a disaster, because you can do a treatment afterwards with full thickness, maybe, or some patients are sent to surgery, which is not the end of the world. There are not so many, if in an, again, in an ideal world.
I agree with that. And, you know, there's a study that was in your journal, Thomas, from Gibson, the study from Australia, you know, which found that even in piecemeal resections, that they basically could predict residual disease based on whether there was poor differentiation or lymphovascular invasion. And then, you know, a margin that was as little as 100 microns in the piecemeal specimen. And I don't know fully how they interpret that, because that specimen to me seems like it wouldn't necessarily be oriented. But if there was a margin, then there was very little chance of residual cancer in the bowel wall, and no poor differentiation or lymphovascular invasion, basically no chance of lymph node invasion. So I think especially if the patient's a poor surgical candidate, you know, we can still in a piecemeal resection, you know, consider these things in deciding whether to proceed. And I think in general, you know, we are seeing fairly good evidence that when we are weighing the risk of residual disease versus the risk of surgery, that in somebody who's elderly or is a poor surgical candidate, we're probably better off leaving them alone or maybe going back and removing the site with the full thickness resection device.
I see the point. So I'm afraid my French friends will beat me up, but this leaves very little space for aggressive ESD management, right?
I mean, I think, again, the ESD, our discussion should be about when to do en bloc resection and when to do piecemeal resection. For many of us, if the lesion is 20 or 30 millimeters, we can get an en bloc resection often with underwater EMR or with the full thickness resection device. And a fair number of the non-granular lesions that have pseudodepression in them are also quite small. And so those are options. And for ESD, when these indications expand, those who want to do that, that's fine. If they've got the time, they can get paid for it. But I'm not ready to say that it's necessary for some of the criteria that are being promoted by the ESD community. But the discussion should really not be so much ESD versus EMR, but for the community endoscopist to think when they see the lesion, does this really need an en bloc resection?
Okay. Well, at the end of this here at DDW, there was another randomized trial, cold versus hot EMR. I think you were part of it.
Yes.
Were the results very different from the German trial we have been reporting in the podcast last October?
I don't think that the results are really different.
But it's the biggest study, huh?
Yeah, it's a bigger study. So it has, I think, close to 400 lesions in it. They're about what you'd expect. The recurrence rate is higher with cold resection, the complication rate is lower. So it gets back to this same trade-off. I think that this study is a little bit reminiscent of the EMR versus ESD study. The results really predict they confirm what you would predict based on the observational data.
Although the differences were less dramatic.
Yeah.
Even with regards to recurrence, there was a pretty high recurrence rate in SSLs as well.
Yeah, for the SSLs, there was really kind of no difference between the hot and the cold. I'm not sure that would be totally unpredictable, because I think that we have seen a lot of observational evidence that the recurrence rate is very low. It was 15% for SSLs, both with hot and cold. But the recurrence rate for hot EMR with SSLs was never really lower in the literature than it was for adenomas. So it's a little bit hard to understand, but I do think the observational data suggests that cold resection, and probably most people are going to use EMR, but maybe even sometimes not using injection, can be very effective in getting out SSLs. I think we're there with SSLs myself. I've really gone to cold resection for SSLs unless I see something in the surface that is worrisome, which isn't very common in SSLs. You know, if you look at the prevalence of cancer in SSLs compared to adenomas, it's 1/7. So the idea that SSLs are more dangerous than adenomas is wrong.
Which arose 15 years ago or so.
Yeah. Yeah. They're only more dangerous in the sense that they're missed more often. Mm-hmm. So when you're taking off an SSL, you know, it's not the end of the world about the outcome of that resection. Mm-hmm. But what is important is that you think about whether there's an SSL three folds behind you on the other wall. you know, and not miss that one, because that one could be the one that causes the interval cancer.
Interesting. Maybe your focus on therapy diminishes your diagnostic capabilities.
maybe. Don't forget to clear the colon. Yeah.
Okay. So, Doc, that was a fantastic tour d'horizon through EMR. I think we learned a lot. And that was a perfect mixture of realism, economic factors, a little bit of philosophy, and a lot of evidence. Thank you very, very much.
Hey, it's great to be with you, Thomas. Good luck to everybody out there. Thanks.
Thank you. Ja, meine Damen und Herren, vielen Dank. Das war ein fantastischer Bericht von der DDW von Doug Rex. Bitte schreiben Sie uns, wenn Sie Fragen haben. Machen Sie weitere Vorschläge. Bis zur nächsten Woche.
Das war Gastrogeplauder, der gastroenterologische Wissenspodcast der DGVS. Alle Informationen und Links zur Folge finden Sie in den Shownotes und unter dgvs.de/podcast. Haben Sie Feedback oder Fragen zur Folge oder möchten Sie ein Thema vorschlagen? Dann schreiben Sie uns an podcast@dgvs.de. Vielen Dank fürs Zuhören und bis zum nächsten Mal bei Gastrogeplauder.